Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
I'm Elizabeth Reese.
I'm Marjorie Pennant.
This is Best to the Nest, the podcast that is all about creating strong, comfortable, beautiful nests that prepare us to fly. You're not really flying anywhere in the Twin Cities right now, though. As we're recording this, Marjorie, we've had the worst air quality in the country, in Minnesota, and then particularly in the Twin Cities. I mean, we've gone through this before, but it's really felt bad the last couple of days. Yesterday morning started out clear and crisp and gorgeous. And then by the end of the day, you couldn't even go outside. There's so much smoke from the Canadian wildfires.
That's so strange to me.
Yeah.
Like that's such a weird, I caught that a little bit in Arizona because obviously we had some fires there. The strangest thing though I ever experienced with forest fires was I was driving up to a shoot in a little mountain town in Arizona. And as I was driving up and sort of in the more rural part of Arizona, I could see the scorched earth.
Wow.
And that was very weird. I mean, it was very weird to see that. But the air quality, that's just scary in a lot of ways because it's so uncomfortable. And you also know it's just so bad for you. There's no getting
it's
around
so bad.
It.
I know. And there's nothing you can do. I mean, it's just sitting there. You know, we have air purifiers running everywhere in our house always. And then I take precautions on my skin and all these things, but it's just, you could smell it. You can see it. It makes you a little bit congested. Like I've had a little bit of a low grade headache the last couple of days. And then, I mean, I don't know if you can hear it, but it sounds a little bit congested in my head, my own self.
What's so, you know, many, I think we take air quality in some ways, our generations take air quality for granted.
Yes.
I remember in the 70s, my mom was working full time. And I don't know why this sticks out as such a strong memory, but she would have to send her clothes to the dry cleaner often because of the dark soot. I mean, literally the ring around the collar. The ring around the collar was from pollution.
Pollution.
It was just soot that would gather sort of around your neck as it would settle on you.
Yeah.
And then a while back, I was looking through an old National Geographic and it was either Wales or Scotland. It was a coal town. And it was pictures from the early 1900s where the town was literally black with soot.
Wow.
Yeah. Look it up. If you've never seen those when you know, London, when everybody was coal burning and what that did to air quality and what that put in the air, it just goes to show you that all of these restrictions have worked for us over the years in terms of industrial pollution, but now we have to figure out a way to stop the wildfires because if you look at what's going on in Canada, it's so frightening. It's so incredible and so sad.
It is really sad. I mean, because you think like we're sad dealing with bad air quality, but like imagine what's happening there and to all of the wildlife and all the things. You know, remember a couple of years ago when all of Australia was on fire and you would just see the wildlife running away and trying and having nowhere to go. And it was just it's just really tragic. I think it just is another it reminds you of the things that we sort of take for granted and that we just kind of appreciate as just being part of our life. And it makes your city feel sort of like post-apocalyptic when you just, there's like a spot, I mean, you know, very close to my house, I can see the downtown skyline. I don't live that far from downtown. And so I can see it from the bridge, but I couldn't see it yesterday. And it's different from a fog. When it's a foggy day, it's like that cool mist and it's kind of like mysterious.
And it feels good on your skin.
And it smells good. Yeah. And it's like hydrating and all those kinds of things. This is not that.
No. Now, right there in your voice, I feel like I heard a smokiness.
I'm going to sneeze at
but
some point.
I could be imagining that.
I feel sneezy coming on. So I'm like sneezy Smurf today.
But I think you should tell everybody a little bit about what you told me, because you were saying that you use something called smoke drops.
Oh, smoke alarm drops.
What are they called?
This is from my skincare company that I love, Smoke Alarm Drops. So the company is called Pour Moi Climate Smart Skincare. And what's so fascinating, I got to send you some of this. You'll be obsessed. I have never given you my Pour Moi. Boy, I've been a bad friend.
I'm nodding yes.
Yes, bad friend. I have been. It's so we should have Uli on our podcast. She's the founder, but I've been working with them for about 2 years. I started using the products a year before I did any ad for them ever. Right. I was
just
like,
to see.
I said, I remember it was July of 2020. And I thought, I'm just going to use, or maybe 2021. And I said, I'm just going to use this every day and see what happens. And I've been obsessed, but it's all about, the whole philosophy behind it is that your skin changes with the weather. Your skin is a barrier that will always be adjusting to protect you and help you work in harmony with the weather. And so these skincare products, you shift them based on the time of year you're in and then also the daily climate. So like this time of year, I have a couple different day creams and I'll switch them based on if it's cool or if it's hot and humid. And then she has these drops called weatherproof drops. And one of them is called the smoke alarm drops, and it protects your skin from the smoke. The smoke particles are so small, they'll adhere to your skin, and they're actually really bad with a lot of moisturizers because a lot of moisturizers have like humectants in them that'll cause stuff to stick to it, that's what'll happen to the smoke particles. And then they cause tons of oxidative damage. There's research coming out showing that smoke is worse for your skin than even for your lungs and your heart, because your skin is your largest organ in your body. So you add these I add a drop to my face moisturizer and put it all on my face. And then I add a couple drops to my body cream and put it all over my body. Especially, I don't do the smoke alarm drops on my body every day, but when there's wildfire smoke, I do.
Well, I think we don't even need to see the scientific research. I think we can look at friends of ours who are smokers. And it's no surprise that smoking and drinking alcohol both age your skin. But I think that people should know about that because it makes that company seem really forward thinking. They're thinking about climate and your skin, because it is going to be a conversation going forward for sure.
Yeah, and it is even without any conversation about climate change, just climate in general. And if you live in a place like Minnesota, I think it's kind of intuitive for us here because we shift so many things with the seasons because our seasons are so
extreme,
definitive and extreme. Yeah. And
definitive's a good word.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a nice way to go. But anyway, I love that company. Full disclosure, I do ads for them, but I use it every single day. Right. And I don't feel, it's kind of amazing. Like my skin doesn't feel like it's aged in the last few years.
Your skin is beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful.
I mean, I think I have good skin, but it's not changing, which is really nice. And when you're in your 40s is when I think you really start to notice it, if it starts to shift.
When I saw it, but this is what everybody, when I was doing skincare commercials too, what everybody would tell me is that the better you take care of your skin when you're younger, the better it will be as you get older. Obviously, that seems very intuitive. Mm-hmm. And both you and I talk a lot about, like, we're not using a lot of extreme means to protect our skin.
Right.
I have done Botox. I don't do it regularly. Mm-hmm. I don't do fillers. I don't do any of that stuff. But I think for me, my skin really started to change. I can look at pictures of myself in my late 40s and pretty similar. When it really started to change was probably along with my stress level in my my early 50s. And then sort of like 52, 53, 54 is really when I started to see sort of creping on your neck.
Nora Ephron.
By Nora Ephron. And it's true. It's like you see, if you've taken beautiful care of your face, your neck will go first. And you gotta put the
skincare on your neck. Like I put it on my neck and on my chest.
That's what everybody tells you to do now. I think, and even when I was in my 40s, I mean, it was clear, like, take care of your neck, but it's such fragile skin. It's like the skin around your eyes. And so that's really where you start to see it. But if you take good care of your skin, I think you can sustain truly into like your early 50s, and then you'll start aging. But even now I look at it, and my mom, I mean, she she looked beautiful well into her 80s.
For sure.
And she would do a lot of, and we've talked about this, a lot of facial exercises, which yes. I believe in. She would, you know, she would push it up. She would push it.
Like Gua Sha. I mean, that's what the, yeah. that's what the whole, yeah. that's that same basis. And I know I'm with you on that. I think I don't want to pass judgment on anybody who does like the Botox and the fillers and stuff. No. We're certainly not doing that. But I am telling you, and I have said this too, I'm never saying never. So it's not like I'm going to go someday, I'm never going to get it. I've gotten Botox, I think it was either two or three times, and it was in, it might've only been twice. And it was in my early 20s or like not early, late 20s. And it was sort of in that thing where it was like, if you do it now, if you do a little bit now, then you won't have to do as much later. And I really hated how it felt in my face.
Right.
And it felt like I had a steel plate in my forehead. And I've always sort of had some forehead wrinkles because I'm expressive with my forehead. I don't have too much of the
you don't have any.
11 line where I like furrow. I think it just matters where you make your expression. So I remember seeing forehead lines when I was like in high school because I was just expressive that way. But I hated how it felt in my face so much that I said, this is not for me. And I've never done a filler. And it's just not my jam. I don't know.
Everybody should do their own research, but there is, because we've sort of had a successive generation of people who have had fillers and that are trying to deal with the residual effect of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people have fine experiences, some people don't, but do your own research. And I would say definitely on the fillers, that's the one to research. And well, even Botox, I am very careful about what I inject into my body. I'll just say
that. I would 100% agree with that.
I'll just say that. I'm very careful about that. But this, none of this is what we were going to talk about today.
No, went on a smoke tangent. It's like we were sitting here smoking a cigarette, getting distracted, but we were not smoking cigarettes. Side note, boy, remember the days when people in newsrooms would just sit and puff cigs and even on television news, anchors would have cigarettes as they were presenting the news. Time to be alive that was.
there was an anchor in New York when I lived in New Jersey when I was first married. And there was an anchor in New York, and I can't remember his name, but he would always smoke in the commercial breaks. And so you would just see a little bit of residual smoke left as he was putting down his cigarette at the last minute. I'm so glad because I worked in newsrooms at a time when everybody could smoke. And if you're not a smoker, it's just horrible because it's just messy. So I am grateful that there are some limitations of where people can do that. But I've had meetings with bosses outside on the curb because they needed to smoke. So,
but those an addiction, man. That's something I'm thankful. I think most smokers would tell you they wish they wouldn't have started.
Oh, for sure.
And I'm thankful that that is not an addiction. The only addiction that I'm comfortable having really is coffee. And coffee is a ritual. It's a little bit of an addiction too, but the rest of them, I don't want to have an addiction.
Yeah. The coffee one is sad for me because I'm having to finally at 58 come to grips with the fact that I am an addict and that AFib is not worth multiple cups of coffee.
So I could have told you that you were a coffee addict 15 years ago. Yeah. And when we would be in the studio doing a radio show together, and I would have to say, okay, so the pace of your speaking, I love you. I think you are a gifted broadcaster. Let me just start with that is what I would do. You are a gifted broadcaster and a pleasure to be around.
Uh-huh.
But the pace at which you are communicating with our listeners, I think is becoming a little bit too quick and staccato for proper understanding. So we're going to switch to tea.
Yeah.
Time to switch to tea.
You were in charge of them.
But you're good on coffee. Like you're fun, you're quick, you're effective. It's just fast.
Being fast. Yeah, the amount of people that over my life that have made fun of my walk is is a sign of how quick I can be once I'm properly caffeinated. But I am only allowed now, Elizabeth, about 3/4 of a cup a day.
Wow.
Because if I drink more than that, my heart does some pretty fantastic things and I can't breathe.
Yeah.
So that's a good way to stop an addiction.
Boy, how the tables have turned. These are the days of our lives. Okay. Why did we come here, Marjorie? Not to talk about any of this. And how many minutes are we into this podcast? Nesters, we thank you for putting up with us, and we apologize.
Should we just be done with this one and just say, this is the episode and then this is it? No, we were coming because actually it's a very important topic today.
Yeah.
I found this article in The Atlantic. The headline was, "The first social media babies are growing up and they're horrified."
Wow.
That's a great headline. The writer is Kate Lindsay. Now, this is something that you and I have touched on, not only on the radio show, but over the years on Best of the Nest. You and I have not completely differing opinions on kids and social media. We can find some convergent points, but I think after we go through this, I think you will redefine your strategy on your children.
And
I think, and I hope that most people listening will really listen to what we're talking about today. I feel so strongly about this, and it's the one thing in my life that I felt strongly about, and I'm at the other end of it, and I feel good about the decisions I made. And what I'm referring to is, our children were young when my husband and I did a morning show. It would have been the most natural thing in the world. Facebook started in 2006. It would have been the most natural thing in the world for us not only to share our children's names, but to share their faces. And we chose not to. We never used their names on the air. They went by Itchy and Scratchy. And my husband and I were talking about this last night. And he said, you know, you really drove that train. He said, I really didn't feel that strongly about it one way or the other. But he said, I remember you telling me at the time, I didn't remember this, but he said, I remember you telling me at the time that you felt like it was unfair when they didn't have, they would never tell us, they would never be mad at us for not sharing more of their lives as opposed to less.
Okay.
That we were better erring on the side of guarding their privacy. Mm-hmm. And I went so far as to, you know, when schools will send home a permission slip that say, you know, if a TV station comes in, or we're going to do some media, you know, in the school, do we have permission for your kids to be on camera? Have you gotten that note yet?
Yeah, well, we get it all the time for if they are in photos that would end up like on the website.
Right.
Can they be in the photos?
Yep.
And that I think I always say no to, because I don't really want people to know where my kids go to school.
And I always said no. So I was always a no on that. You cannot share my child's face.
Yeah.
So I was really strong about that. But here's the gist of the article. So she talks about, and she said, the children of the Facebook era, which truly began in 2006 when the platform opened to everyone, are growing up, preparing to enter the workforce and facing consequences of their parents' social media use. Many are filling the shoes of a digital persona that's already been created and that they have no power to erase. Yeah. And when you think about that, it's crazy to think about your parents shared things that if you had the choice, you never would have shared. And the writer goes on to talk about parents, and we all know this, parents who share potty training stories.
I know.
Parents who share, now that kid who's potty training is going to go in for a job interview someday.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's insane. Parents who share tantrums, who share what looks so cute. I'm very strident about this. They're not really thinking through about when their child's 18, if that child would make the choice to share that moment.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, she goes on to say, and I'm just going to read this to you, and then we're going to talk about kids. She goes on to say, and this is a little bit lengthy, but I'm paraphrasing most of it. She said, in the United States, parental authority supersedes a child's right to privacy. And socially, we've normalized sharing information about images of children that we never would of adults. There are no real rules against it. Social media platforms have guidelines for combating truly inappropriate content, physical abuse of minors, child nudity, neglect, endangerment, and the like. But uploading non-abusive content can be damaging too, according to kids whose lives have been painstakingly documented online. For parents, posting can be hard to quit. Views, likes, and comments offer a form of positive reinforcement to parents whose work is largely invisible and often thankless. Families who document their lives intimately on YouTube or TikTok can amass large audiences, sponsorships, and ad revenue. Currently, no state or federal laws entitle the children of these family vloggers to any money of the earned. That is shocking to me.
I know.
That is shocking. Some new parents feel there's no excuse for subjecting children to invasive public scrutiny. Christina, a 34-year-old mother from Los Angeles who asked to be identified by only her first name for privacy reasons, has posted just a handful of photos of her daughter and covers her face in all of them. Even if parents have decided to keep their children off social media, they're not the only ones with phones. Christina says she has asked friends and family to take down photos they've posted of her daughter online. I mean, this is so interesting. And what an uncomfortable conversation that would be.
Yeah. People are having that conversation, though. I think people are good about asking. I will have friends who will ask, oh, is it okay if I post this? I mean, I'm different because I am public, you know, so I always ask if I'm going to post, like,
right.
If I were to post a picture of like my sister's children or my nieces and nephew,
right. You've got a big following.
On Jay's side, I ask. I remember always particularly asking my sister-in-law because she has kids who are now 15 and 14. And so when I was like getting more of a social media following, I would always ask, and she was always fine with it. So right. I think people do ask. And then I certainly know people who, if they post photos of their child, they blur out their face.
Right.
And I know public people who do this. And then I know of people who are shifting their perspective. There's a blogger named Jenna Kutcher. Have you heard of her? She's got the Gold Digger podcast. She has millions of followers. She's based in Duluth. I've never met her, but she just recently posted that she has made the decision now that she will no longer. And she posted a lovely message about why she will no longer post photos using her children in any of her content.
What was the reasoning?
She just decided that as they were getting older, they were not able to offer their consent.
Right.
And so it was just feeling like the right thing. And she said, and I don't know if it's going to be forever. I don't know if I'll post maybe like a family Christmas card photo of us, essentially, like if it's a family Christmas card that you would be sending out to everyone, would you be comfortable posting that where you can offer a little bit more of a consent, or it's sort of like something that you all do together as a family?
I mean,
but I remember even like my parents sending out Christmas cards. And if I didn't like how I looked in the photo, I was like freaking horrified. There was one time when my dad really took the reins and just grabbed a random picture of me and my sisters and sent it to everyone he knew. And we were like, WTF. My sisters and I still talk about how it was mortifying.
Well, what's interesting about you saying that is in this article, she talks about how this is the conversation that's happening now with this generation and their parents.
Right.
They're saying, look, you need to go back and you need to delete those.
Right.
You know, because before it really matters, like if you're not necessarily a well-known person, you can delete those because more than likely nobody's downloaded them.
Right.
So
or screenshot it or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can go back to your parents and say, but that's a conversation that this reporter is saying is happening more and more because young adults feel like it wasn't my choice. I didn't need the affirmation. You did. So take it down, which is a very interesting thing. She also follows one woman. She uses this one young woman as an example. Her name is Cammy Barrett, who is now fighting for laws to protect children and what parents can post.
Wow.
And actually laws are being considered in Washington and Illinois of giving children more rights as to what can be shown of their lives and not shown of their lives.
Yeah,
so kids could sue you. I mean, that's what it's going to come to. But she said, Cammy Barrett says she's still feeling the effects of her mother's decade of oversharing. When Barrett was 12, she says she was once followed home by a man whom she believes recognized her from the internet. She was later bullied by classmates who latched onto all the intimate details of her life that her mother had posted online, and she ultimately dropped out of high school.
Oh, boy.
She and her mom have no relationship now, in large part because of the wedge her mother's social media habits put between them.
And you know, yeah, I get this. I think what this is, you were so great at having... You know, this is advice I didn't follow from you. You told me when I had a baby, don't put the baby's face on TV. Don't say the baby's name on TV. I remember this. I mean, when I was
a little
having
bossy
Bernie,
about it too.
Well, this is your thing, you know, and I respect this about you. I really do. I think I think you're right in terms of you will never regret not opening Pandora's box.
Right.
You will regret if you opened it too far and trying to figure out, it's much easier to just say, this is the boundary. This is what I do. I'm done with it.
Right.
Than it is to try to always be figuring out what's the appropriate boundary now.
Right.
There's just, it's easier because you just have set the boundary. You've set that. That being said, I also like work in a visual medium. So it was a little bit different when you were on the radio and you could kind of create yep. these stories, not a story, but like they were a little bit of like the itchy, scratchy character. And you
could
tell
a
like,
story and mind you, every story we told, we would talk to the kids beforehand right. and get their consent. Can right. we tell this story? And it was right. always yes. And if they said no, it wasn't even a question. It wasn't like, oh, but it's so funny. Let us tell it. If it was no, it was no.
It was
that
no.
was the end of it.
Yeah, that was it. I grew up in a pastor's household. So my dad would tell stories about us during his sermons. And I always like really loved that. Like I thought it was like a great honor. I was just like, this is really great. Like I felt like
it's kind of sweet.
It meant I felt like we were important to my dad. And I felt like right. he was never using us as a punchline, even though sometimes it was funny, right. but it was funny about him. Or it right. was a humbling moment about him, right. or it was a lesson that he felt like he was being taught through his children. And so those, and I don't even know, I mean, I should ask him. It'd be interesting to have him on the podcast to talk about making those decisions because right. I don't know if he made those decisions consciously. I do know that I make those decisions consciously. And right. so when I am sharing something about them, I remember sharing a story about Bernie having a tantrum on an apple orchard field trip for her school. And what the story was that I went to chaperone this field trip and I was so excited. And then kids do what kids do, which is like, sometimes they're overwhelmed and they're tired. And it was all about my level of like, I was so shocked. I looked like a mess. I was just like sweaty and just like, oh my gosh, it was a humbling moment about me of a right. lesson of like, just when you think you've got everything together, right. you're reminded that you don't right. have everything together. Yeah. And so
you had this vision of mother, daughter, apple orchard, skipping yes. along. Yeah, of course, as we all would.
And like, then let's wear down. Cute outfits and yeah. like take all these pictures. Yeah. And then it broke down. And so, you know, yeah. and those are the things that like, yeah. when I talk about here on the podcast, I talk about my children in that way. And I think, right. I definitely know the difference when parents are sharing things that just make their kids look like assholes, you know? Yeah. And that to me is not fair and it's not nice and it's not appropriate. And let me tell you, I think sometimes my kids can be a-holes. Like it sucks sometimes. I mean, just like last night, one brought me to tears and I had to go hide in the bathroom yeah. because I was just like, F guys. Man, I'm doing my best. And man, you are just like raking me over the coals all the time, you know? So I'm not saying these things yeah. don't happen, but yeah. it's my boundary has been that I don't use them as a way that it is an illustration of my own life experience and that it is not about their life experience. Have I been perfect at this? I don't think so.
No.
And then I don't use them yeah. in any paid content. So I work with sponsors all the time and yeah. they will say, oh, would you put your kids in a post about XYZ? Would you want to, you know, use this product with your kids and then post about it? And that's to me a hard no, if we worked out like a separate talent fee for them, maybe I would consider it, but that hasn't even been a discussion that right. I've been willing to have because I just don't want to go down that road. And then I think, but I do understand the implications that, you know, I just stopped by Bernie's school yesterday to drop by. It was her last day of school and I wanted to drop off flowers for the teachers because I couldn't be there to pick up because I was on the show. And so right. I'm like, I'm just going right. to stop over. And I popped into her little drama class. And all the kids know that I'm on TV and they know I have a public job and they know all these things. And they say like, are you going to go be on TV? My mom watches you on TV. I saw you on TV. And so there's a whole world of implications for her with that, that are unavoidable. They're unavoidable because even if I don't post her on social media, yeah. even if people are going to know it's impossible. Somebody's going to say, oh, I know her. Her name is this, like, or she says my mom's on that show. I mean, or a parent asks me what I do for a living and then everybody knows, you know, there's like not much I can do about it.
It's coming. And all you can do about it, because now I'm on the other end of that, and we're talking about something very specific because we both were in very public jobs.
Right.
And I would say that that has been a conversation between both of my sons of what that meant for them growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's comforting to me is I couldn't avoid that. That was something I couldn't control. That was my job. I was on the air every day. Their father was on the air every day. We'd get recognized. I mean, they're really literally every time we would go to dinner, somebody would stop by the table. Somebody would either or sit down sometimes at the table when we were having a family dinner. And and of course, we were always super gracious because the fact that people were listening to the show is what allowed us to go out to dinner.
I know, but you can't sit at the family dinner table. Like,
we would be incredibly gracious and people were always very kind to us. But it also was a situation where there was a certain element of now you're involving your family in performance.
Mm-hmm.
Because our children were really well behaved, and particularly in public, they were very well behaved. And, you know, they talk about how that was kind of a weird thing. And it was also weird that people would come up to them and, you know, they were like 10, 11, 12 years old and try and get them to talk about their parents.
Yeah.
Like to get the dirt. Like, what's it really like at your house? What's it really? And that was a very strange existence. And so for me, that made it all the more powerful to me that I was protecting what I could of them and our life and of their life in particular, and not forcing every element of their life to be public. And so all of that having been said, what's so important now, I think, we are public people, but everybody's a public person now.
Mm-hmm.
And so you talk about that mom blogger who's up in Duluth. She's got a million followers. You know, that's a public persona. She's got more followers than most media personalities in town do.
More than me. Yep.
And so I think that I look at, there are two mom bloggers that I follow and I've talked about them. And one I just found so charming. She had how you can find them, but she had this little camera on her daughter in the back seat of the car. And I've talked about this family before. And what was so adorable is the little girl was having, she was very verbal, like your kids, so verbal. And she was having these conversations without knowing that they were being recorded.
Mm-hmm.
So they were as genuine stream of consciousness that I could look at of a 2-year-old
mm-hmm.
or a 3-year-old. Which was fascinating because kids' imaginations at that age, it'll blow your mind. Like when they don't know that they're like being watched, it was adorable. Now she's 3 years older. She's always aware of the camera.
Right.
The woman's son is aware of the camera. Her son got sick last week and she did a reel and she's a beautiful woman, she's in the urgent care holding her son. She's looking gorgeous, of course. She's holding her son, who clearly like has a fever or something because he's got that kind of flushed look.
Yeah.
And he's looking sorrowfully at the camera. And it's like, what are we doing? Sickness as performance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's under the guise. And we walk a fine line here because we're sharing too. So she's sharing her experience with other mothers who might be going through the same experience.
But it's under the guise of authenticity. You're right. It's like, oh, I have to, in order to be authentic, I have to share these moments, but I don't think it's fair. Yeah. I wouldn't, I wouldn't do a photo of my child sick. I don't do photos of my children. Like, I take photos of my kids if they're sleeping, cause I just think they're so sweet, and they're little angel babies.
Yeah.
And I guess I've taken photos of like them sleeping on me. As I look back to post about holding on to the days when I can like have them hold sort of those moments when you feel like, oh my gosh, everyone's always touching me, but then I don't think their faces are in it. It's very tricky because when your child is in a vulnerable moment, I almost go the opposite with that story that you just told about the little girl being in the back seat.
Right.
The things being posted where she wasn't aware of the camera to me is more troubling than the ones where she is aware of the camera.
That's because so interesting.
When it is a moment, when your child believes that it is a moment between you and that child, and that they are expressing themselves to you or learning in that moment. And then you go and share that to people that they don't know, sending it to grandma or something like that might be a different story. But posting that to people they don't know, I find that deeply troubling. And even when I'm posting things really about my kids, they know I'm taking a video of them. I just posted the other day that I made a really cute reel about them riding around on the John Deere tractor.
It was adorable.
With the chickens. It's very funny. You know, they're fun and all those things. And but they're all very well aware. Like, they know I'm taking, you know, Heathcliff's a baby, but I'm taking this video. Look what I put together. And then we post it. And that is a moment that is about it's about the chickens. And it's about what I always think about is like, what's the motivation behind this? Is the motivation to make me look like a better parent? No, the motivation is to encourage people to think that you can find connection to your food and nature anywhere you are, even if you live in the city. That's the motivation. So the motivation isn't, I need to hear about what an amazing parent I am, or like, look how beautiful
my children
are.
You're not looking for that kind of affirmation. Right.
It's, I think you do have to really critically think.
There you go.
What is the motivation behind this post? What is the feeling that I'm trying to portray? And is there any way that my child could be embarrassed by this? There's always that normal level of like, if you go to your parents' workplace and you see pictures of you when you were a kid and you're like, oh, mom, that's embarrassing. You have this up for all of your coworkers to see. Right. There's that. But then there's also, am I exploiting anything about our relationship or about their vulnerability or about their childhood? That kind of stuff I don't feel comfortable with. And especially like, I even get really hesitant about things with kids in bathing suits and things like that. Like, it's just, you got to be careful about this.
Well, I think, and this is, I'm so glad you put it that way, because I do want to stress here, I am strident about this, but I also feel very strongly that I'm not trying to shame anybody. I'm not trying to shame you if you post lots of kids of, you know, pictures of your kids. I'm really
not. I don't
not.
Feel shamed, just so
I,
you know.
I think what I'm trying to do, what's really important to me is that if you're going to do something and you sort of hit it, you sort of nailed it, is understand why you're doing it. Because I think if you're going to think through the social media strategy for your family, and I guess that's really the point, is have a strategy. Why are you doing what you're doing?
Yeah.
And 10 years from now, when your kids sit you down and say, why did you do this? You can say, this is why. Because trust me, when your kids are older, I mean, I've had so many conversations like that with my kids, because there were things that I was really strict about that they don't appreciate that I was so strict about it.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had to have conversations as adults. Why did you do that? I didn't like that you did that. And it's like, well, did the best that I could, but I did think about it. And this is why I did what I did. And I think so when we talk about social media and posting pictures of your children and posting pictures of your family, that is, it is, has become such a part of the fabric of family now that it becomes a part of what your family values are, not mine. It has nothing to do with my values. My values were, as you know, so strict, but what are they? Just be able to define them so that when your children ask you, you can actually tell them that you thought about it and you considered them and you consider them whole people when you made these decisions. Because I think it's important and it's a conversation that's going to happen.
You know, when you think about, I will say, like, drawing a hard line on profiting off of your children. Mm-hmm. If you are in a circumstance and you might have a very talented child who could be earning, I mean, you were modeling as a child, Marjorie, like you were making money and all of those things, but
it was my choice. My parents
that was your
asked,
choice.
I asked to do it.
Right.
I
know, but
to do it.
But
so.
Had you become like, what if you like blew up as Shirley Temple, this like amazing model? And then it's, well, I'm asking you, can we go to New York so that I can do this stuff? And your mom says, well, I'll give up my career to go and do this. I mean, it's never just like this black and white, all of a sudden your child is a star. It's little steps, little steps of them asking. And it's little steps though, that get really tricky when a child becomes a breadwinner in the family. We just went through this the other day because Frankie wanted to watch that little kid. He's darling, but it's that Ryan. He's Ryan on YouTube. I mean, his family makes bank off of him.
Is he like the toy tester?
He would just like, it started, I think, with just all of these unboxings.
Right.
But I'm just very uncomfortable consuming that. And this is why I just had a conversation with Jay, because our kids like to use our iPad for, they have a Simply Piano app that Bernie likes to use. And then what we've also enjoyed is that they have on YouTube, there's a lot of great drawing videos. So, you know, Bernie is like really into art.
Right.
And so she'll say, oh, can I watch a video on how to draw a flower? And then she'll learn how to draw the flower. And I think this is so cool. You know,
I love that. Yeah.
This is like, what an amazing use of technology is for her to watch it and listen to the guy talking about how you shape it and then trying it again. But the problem is, if you're not watching like a hawk, the next thing that comes up is something. I mean, we just went through this the other day where Bernie was watching gymnastics videos. She loves to watch little girls doing gymnastics. She's in gymnastics. And so she likes to watch people do gymnastics so she can see, you know, it's just like when I was a kid, you would watch gymnastics on TV. And then all of a sudden I realized that she's watching something on USA Gymnastics. It had popped up next and it was in the first like 2 minutes and it was on Larry Nassar. And I was like, holy hell. Like,
oh,
I mean,
no.
And so the problem is that these things are, and I say that just to illustrate like the snowball effect of how out of control it can get and how this is an area with what you're consuming and what you're putting out there that I think, to your point, is we are not doing it with enough intention at all. And that doesn't necessarily mean that the way that Marjorie is going about it or did go about it is the way that you need to as a nester, because we all know and that things are different now than they were, and you might not have a public job and there's all these different things to consider, but it's like, you have to take your intention level about things and multiply it by 100. I have a friend who just said, my worst decision was letting my child get Snapchat. It was the worst decision. Mm. She begged me, she pleaded, her sports team that she's on, this is how the kids were communicating. So she was, and all the other parents were okay with it. And so she, and I let her do it. And then it has led to these very difficult things that have been happening through Snapchat. And it's to your point, when you open the box, like she's like, if I could just go back in time and hold firm that boundary, I wish I would have held firm.
Yeah.
And that those kind of cautionary tales, I think, is where you really have to start from when you're making the decisions, because you can't get it back. Like, you can't go back once you've gone down the road.
And I would say no. And I would say to anybody who's got young children, talk to families that have teenagers. Talk to people who are living through it right now and see the end story at your start story. Understand, like that example of the woman who said if she could go back, she would never have allowed her child to have Snapchat, you know, or her young daughter to have Snapchat. And I will tell you, so we were at the pool last night. We were, Ian and I were talking. And while we're talking, going on to the right of us, were three girls, probably 11 or 12 years old. Maybe. I know. Probably, definitely not in high school. They looked like so many girls that age. Their hair was perfectly straight. They were they were perfectly, nails were good, smiles were good, and they were taking selfies and they were pursing their lips. They were doing the whole, that sort of Kardashian pose.
Yeah.
And I'm just, it's like blowing my mind, because I'm thinking at 11 years old, I mean, I was aware, obviously, of what I looked like. But the idea of taking pictures of myself,
I know,
I just can't even imagine. Like, I just can't even imagine that. And so we got home from, so we were just, Ian and I, and that's how we started talking about the conversation we're going to have today.
Yeah.
We came home last night and we were watching Amy Schumer's new Netflix special where she talks about that. And she actually says, have you ever seen a bunch of like preteen girls taking pictures of themselves? They know their angles. And she said, how old were you before you knew, like, what was the best angle that somebody could take a picture of you? And she said, and when I was growing up, we got our picture taken once a year, once a year. And I thought, oh my God, that's so true. I mean, think about it. Like, your school picture was such a big deal.
Yeah.
Once a year.
Yeah.
That's not happening anymore. So,
yeah, it's, I don't know if we solved anything today, Marjorie.
We didn't.
Per usual on this podcast. You know, you don't come here for solutions. You just come here for a good time. could be our new tagline.
Love that. I think that needs to be our new tagline. That's hysterical.
Good. That is good. Oh. But I think the bottom line is, as with everything, is just be intentional. Be intentional, know your value, and have the conversations. And I would say, even, you know, even though I just said once you open it, you can't get it back. I don't know. I mean, don't be afraid to change course. I found Jenna Kutcher's comments really inspiring, because I was thinking it was a reminder to me to go, okay, I got to just check in with myself, make sure that I'm in a good spot with all of this. But it definitely shifts as they get older, because they've got their own life and their own.
Well, that's the thing. And I was thinking about that last night, because it's easy for me to say, you know, I didn't allow this, I didn't allow that, I had control over this. The social channels were nothing like they are now. So it's easy for me to look back and have sort of drawn a line when Facebook started in 2006. It's so different today. And so I was saying to Ian, like, I think if I had a preteen child today and they wanted a social account, and this is impossible, but this is what I would tell them, is that I'm fine with that if you use it as a creative outlet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're going to make the social channel about the art that you want to share or something that you want to share, as opposed to just pictures of yourself.
Yeah.
Because I look at Bernie's, I mean, you showed me some of Bernie's artwork, and she does, she's a lovely artist, you know, and I think she's got, you know, she's just a lovely artist. And for someone like Bernie, or for somebody who has something inside them that they want to express, I think that's kind of cool. Because most of the Instagram follows that I have are artists. I just follow their work. I don't follow them.
Right.
And so I think that would be an interesting strategy. Would that work? I have no idea. You know, I can sit here and say that that would be my lofty goal. I have no idea. But it just goes back to, again, if you just got to think it through and find what's right. But the conversation will happen with your older children if you don't do it right.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Know that that threat's looming.
Man. Everything's looming. Dun, dun, dun. Man. All right. Love chatting with you, Marjorie. If you're enjoying this podcast, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. I personally am subscribed to this podcast, in case you were wondering, Marjorie Punnett. And give us a review at Apple Podcasts. I haven't left a review for our own podcast, but I think I might do it today.
Yeah, do it today. Find us on Facebook and Instagram at Best of the Nest. We are the podcast that brings you home.